Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Comes into the block by Chris Myers. Secondary at first, brought down in the play by Bobby McCain. The rookie Cushenberry brings the lumbering nut, makes a great block and a 20-yard jolt down to the 36 of Miami. Second and three, Gordon Reiser, a block, blocked in there by Kumandali. There he goes for six. Gordon runs to daylight. 20-yard touchdown run, and the Broncos build on their lead. Third and 21, down he goes, sacked there by Chubb. He had been quiet. Sixth sack of the season. Fifth Denver sack today. Into the end zone and intercepted, picked off by the All-Pro Justin Simmons. End zone interception.
We're back.
Well, I don't know about that, but feels good. And you know,
Mike,
what?
I really don't care.
And you know what, Mark? As I was making notes during the course of the game, I was writing down things that. Well, I haven't written in a long time. Writing things down like, wow, actually looked like a real offense on that drive. Like the play calling. Nice mix of run and pass. Pat Shurmur seems to be in a rhythm. Like what Broncos are doing with their running game. I mean, they looked decent on offense. They looked terrific on defense. There were no big special team meltdowns. That actually looked like a real football team yesterday.
Yeah, like a real football team.
We're back.
I mean, that's the first time we've been able to say that. And, you know, obviously, Tua didn't play well, but a lot of that has to do with the defensive pressure that you applied to Tua and what they were doing on the back end. So all those things that you said are 100% true. I mean, every one of those things when it comes to the way they played offensively, we've talked about this forever. You've got to mitigate some of the issues that your quarterback has. How do you do that? You run the football. You open up the play action game. You open up the boot game with some easy crossing routes where you're having half field reads. Like, all that stuff matters. And that's something that they did. They were in a bunch of two tight ends, three tight end formations, you know, trying to get more physical and run the passing play action stuff out of that. I thought that's what we've been talking about, and that's what they decided to do. And that to me was the real difference in what they've been doing compared to what they did yesterday.
Well, let's start with what they were able to do, the balance they were able to achieve, because we talked about this last week, how the run-pass ratio was just tremendously out of whack. It was almost criminal what they were asking of Drew Lock to, like, run the ball like 18, 22 times and throw it 40-plus. His last four games have been 40-plus pass attempts. Yesterday, 30 passes, 33 runs. They ran the ball 33 right. times for 189 yards, averaging 5.7 yards per carry. And Mark, I got to ask you about the offensive line, because it seemed like they kept running the ball to the right. Reisner and Bowles were doing a lot of pulling, some pancake blocks in there. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, you know, they got outside. They got away from all the middle runs. You know, they got away from a lot of the cutback where they had adjunct plays to some of their wide zone stuff. And, you know, the outside runs with the pulls, they had some tackle pulls, they had some guard, like power, counter stuff, which, you know, is more of a gap. That's more what we would consider gap kind of deal. So, listen, man, like, you've got to figure out what you can do. And this is, you know, this is one of the things that I talk to coordinators about all the time is what are you? What is your identity? And what can you do well? And after you establish something that you can do well, and we saw that with the trap game and the counter game and the power game, once you establish something that you can do well, then build off of that. You know, show that off the play action, show that off the boot game, figure out a way that you can exploit a defense by continuing to do those things. So that to me is like, that's what good coaching is. That's adjusting to what your players can do. That's figuring it out. It's too bad that it happened in week 11. This is the first time that we've talked about this offense where we're saying, man, that was a really nice game plan. I mean, you can go back to the Jets in a win, but we weren't saying this about Pat Shurmur and that offense. Now, there's still some issues. I mean, you know, we're like, right now you're sitting there talking about a guy like Drew Locke and go, wow, you know, that he looked much better. He still didn't look good. I mean, he started off 0 for 6 with a pick. He missed how many deep shots did he miss in that game? He must have missed 5 or 6 deep shots that were there. Now, he finished with one at the very end, obviously, but he must have missed 5 or 6 of them. And that was, what that play was designed to do is to throw it away.
Throw it out of bounds, yeah.
Yeah, you realize it's a throwaway play.
Yeah, so, I think his reaction afterwards was, I was trying to throw it out of bounds. And
yeah.
He just hung up there.
Because it happened in the game that I called as well. You have 4 seconds left on the clock. It takes 5 seconds to scramble like to your right and chuck one out of bounds. It's 5 seconds on the clock before it comes down if you throw it deep enough. So that's the whole purpose is just throw one out of bounds and that one comes down in Tim Patrick's arms and, you know, it's a big gainer. But the bottom line is, still, you know, they mitigated some of the issues that Drew Locke has had by the way they call the ball.
Hold that thought, because in the week-to-week evaluation of can he be the guy or can he not be the guy, where are we at on this Monday morning? Want to get your reaction to the game, a Bronco reaction or overreaction Monday? Ramoslav.com, text line 303-713-1043. So what about Drew Locke? How did he play? And Mark has a major announcement to make. He'll do that coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com. Motors.com.
Oh. Okay, easy.
Yeah.
Easy, Melania.
Settle down there.
Easy. Easy.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
We're back.
Does sound good, though.
Does kind of feel good to win on Monday, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, heading into a holiday week, it just...
Yeah.
And it beat a good team. I mean, you can't just slough this off and say, well, they beat the Dolphins. I mean, the Dolphins had won 5 in a row.
Yeah, the Dolphins have played well, really well. Now, Tua didn't play very well yesterday, but a lot of that I put credit to the Broncos. I mean.
What'd they do? What'd they do well defensively?
Well, physically, I thought the Broncos controlled the tempo, they controlled the line of scrimmage.
Yes, Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, Bradley Chubb. That's about the quietest 6-sack season. But Alexander Johnson is, thumping people. I think they played well on all three levels. The back end played well. I thought the front played well. I thought they dominated the line of scrimmage. I thought their linebackers played downhill and hit people. I mean, anytime you get, 5-6 sacks in a game?
6 sacks.
Yeah, 6 sacks in a game, and, you're putting it on them. So I just thought all those things were, were well played. So their defense played exceptionally well. Justin Simmons played well, tackled well, made a couple of plays on the football. Their corners did a good job. I just thought the whole thing, the whole operation on the defensive side of the ball, all three levels looked really good.
Jim writes in, great win. It actually looked like a football team yesterday. Hats off to Pat Shurmur for finally learning how to run the ball. And can we finally pay Justin Simmons? Dude is money. Got 4 picks?
Yes.
Doesn't miss a snap?
No. Got that pick to seal the victory at the end of the game.
Hey, maybe they're going to end up overpaying him. But for a team that needs good players and needs more good players, this is not a fight that I would...
It's not a hill you die on right here?
Go to great lengths to win.
Right.
Overpay the guy if you have to, so be it, but keep him here. You need good players.
Need good players. He's a good back end player. You know, the thing.
He's not a great player, but he's a good player. You need more good players.
He's a really good player. I think the reason, Mike, that he probably doesn't get the props that some of the safeties get, because the league has really gone to these kind of hybrid guys, you know, that can be linebacker slash in the box players, blitzers and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he's more of a center fielder. They more turn that stuff over to Kareem Jackson to be the guy who's the insert guy, you know, inserts down into the box. So he's more of the insert guy, whereas Justin Simmons is more the center fielder. And the center fielders aren't the ones that are making the impact plays around the line of scrimmage and the sacks and stuff. So he's not asked to do that as much as Kareem is. But like you said, still a really good player. And this is an organization that needs they need really good players too. They need to reward really good players because that's a morale thing. And I believe in that.
Another one on the RonMaslot.com text line. When will the Broncos stop using Gordon, especially in critical situations? He's a fumble machine. Philip Lindsay should be the go-to guy.
He did put another one on the ground, didn't he?
Tied with Ezekiel Elliott for most fumbles among running backs with four.
Put another one on the ground.
But he did have two touchdowns, furthering the idea that this guy's a touchdown machine. And he was on his way in for a third.
When he fumbled. If he's the one that gets the ball down there, then he's probably going to be the one that scores. And again, I keep telling you guys this, nobody wants to listen to me, but there are limitations with Philip Lindsay. And the limitations is blitz pickup and catching the ball in the backfield. So, listen, man, I love Philip Lindsay. I love the way he runs. He runs hard. He does all those things exceptionally well. But let's face it. If every time you come in, the defense has a tip, hey, they're not throwing here. They're running here. It limits you as an offense. It limits you. It limits the deception that you have in your offense. And so there's a reason. I know Lindsay fans don't want to hear it, right? Because they just love, hey, see you, woohoo, Lindsay, hometown kid, grew up here. He should be the guy. I know you don't want to hear about limitations. And I get, hey, man, Gordon has his limitations too. Put the ball on the ground, done it four times, leads the league in fumbles. Not a good thing. But I'm telling you, there are reasons that are legitimate reasons.
Gordon's 15 carries for 84 yards. Lindsay, 16 carries for 82. So, I guess exactly the way you drew it up on paper. The idea that we're going to have a two-pronged running back attack, and both guys ran it. Both guys ran it very well, save for Gordon's fumble, which could have been a big one, but disaster was averted. So, the Broncos 4-6. They get New Orleans coming up this Sunday. Mark, would you like to share something with everybody right now?
Well, I mean, New Orleans is going to be a Fox game. And who will be the hometown broadcaster on that game? Woohoo! That's right. Yours truly.
Stank calling another Bronco game, everybody.
I am calling.
I'm joking.
Yeah, I am calling another Bronco game.
Second game of the year.
Hallelujah.
I don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah, I don't have to go anywhere.
You have to stay home for Thanksgiving week.
Right.
No traveling. Ordinarily, you would have to travel on Thanksgiving.
Wind blew down. Right. Or Friday morning.
Or early depending. Friday. And you would not have been able to be here Friday.
No. Well, we're not.
Well, we're not here Friday.
Yeah. But we're here in
But
thought.
You're here. You're here week long.
Yeah, I get to be. Yeah, I get to be here. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're really excited at Dove Valley that you're going to be calling this game. One of their own.
Yeah.
One of their favorite sons coming back home.
Do you think they'll be like, let's win this one for Stink?
Yeah, absolutely.
This one's for Stink. They'll be all the way down there on the sideline.
No way. This one's for Stink.
Yeah. I think that's great.
All right. So Sunday.
Sunday, baby.
On Fox, Mark Schlereth once again on the call. Of the Saints.
Remember, for it to be a forward pass, it's got to go forward.
Thank you.
Those are the pearls of wisdom you can expect from Mark on Sunday. Okay, here comes the Morning Brew. Plenty more reaction to the Broncos' big win. And what was a disastrous weekend for the Nuggets? That's next.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat like me, and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stat.
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues? What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on.
Phyllis, I don't really know how much Phil gets talked about in the media or if he really gets pumped up or shot down, but he deserves a whole lot of credit for this run game and this offense. I've been extremely impressed with how he's progressed as a leader for this offense, just as a football player in general.
Well, there's Drew Locke, who, first of all, did pass the toughness test.
Yes.
In going out and playing a game in which a lot of all you ex-football players were like, yeah, he should be able to play through this. Nate Jackson called it a little boo-boo. So
right.
It was important that he go out and play. He did. And after a terrible start, what was he, 0 for his first six, I believe?
Yeah, 0 for 6 with a pick, I believe.
He ended up, I thought, playing pretty well the rest of the way. And maybe it shows how low the bar is set for Drew Locke right now. That 18 of 30 for 270 yards, no touchdowns, and a pick in a game in which you score 20 points is considered not bad.
Yeah, I think I think you look at what he did. I mean, I think there's still those inaccuracies on the deep ball. There's a bunch of deep ball. You know, and part of bringing Shermer in here was, hey, man, he led the league in deep ball strikes or completions. Well, I mean, you know, Drew Locke has shown that the accuracy issues exist when it comes to throwing the deep ball. So that's a problem, Mike. That's got to get better. But I thought they did a much better job of play calling, the play action stuff, getting him easy throws, whether it was, you know, the slants or the crossing routes or, you know, the flood to one side where you've got, you know, a boot keep out the backside. You flood that side of the football field and you give him an easy half field read. So all those things to me were kind of the big difference makers.
Next on the morning bro.
You know, I don't know how much it helped him. You know, maybe he could talk to you and he'd say, man, Dalton's annoying as heck. I wish he would quit talking to me. But that's my boy, and I got so much belief in him. And I knew he could play a great football game today, and that's exactly what he did. He stayed composed. He did some stuff out there that people probably didn't even notice in terms of play calls. He did a heck of a job, man. So that's my guy. I'm ride or die with him.
Dalton Risner, the cooler.
Yeah.
Showing up to work yesterday wearing work gloves.
Right.
Then he went out and worked. He and Garrett Bowles. On the pole, it looked like...
Yeah.
Reminded me of the days at 69 was...
Well, let's not get crazy. I didn't pull.
You never pulled?
No, that got taken out of the offense. I got hurt in a game in Cincinnati in 96. I quit pulling.
Mark's like, I'm just going to hang out right here in my little phone booth.
Yeah. I was like, that's not what I do.
We saw some... new stuff, some new wrinkles, some variety in the run game with the pulling of Garrett Bowles, the pulling of Dalton Risner, a lot of strong runs to the right. Bowlesy with a tremendous pancake on one play where he just ran over a guy, just roar!
Right. Like a car running over a rodent, man.
Yeah, it was just roadkill.
Yeah, vermin. I mean, it was something.
So
Bowles, he might need a song.
Is Bowles going to go to the Pro Bowl?
No, his zone is GB zone.
I know his zone is GB zone, but we might need to get Bowles a song. No, it's no longer appropriate. A song that you know really shows how well he's playing.
By the way, don't you have a bet? One of the texters reminded me of a bet that you made that if he makes it to the Pro Bowl, you'll pose in a Bowlesy jersey.
If I made the bet, yeah, well, we can get a Bowlesy jersey. Hey, man, Bowlesy's playing great. He's playing great. I'd be happy to wear a Bowlesy jersey the way he's playing right now. Good for him.
Good day for the offensive line as they
Ran the ball 33 times for 189 yards. Next on the Morning Brew.
We knew he was going to be the catalyst for the offense. We knew he was going to try to start the run game and go out there and have him with his big arm and the way he moves around. So we just wanted to get to him early, rattle him up a little bit early, and I feel like we did that. And you saw it for the rest of the game. We just kept getting back there. So I feel like the key was just to make sure we kept him in the pocket. And once we did that, just those hits started adding up. And, yeah, so it was good for us for sure.
Yeah, Bradley Chubb with a sack. Part of a 6-sack attack by the Broncos defense. They also had the interception at the end of the game. Finally, Vic Fangio's defense delivering as advertised. We had the pressure, had the turnovers, made Tua look really bad to the point where he got yanked.
Yeah. How quiet have been, 6 sacks at this point in the season? What, through 10-11 games? How many games have the Broncos played?
They're 10 games.
To have 6 sacks through 10 games, coming off an ACL? Now, some of them, I understand, were more coverage sacks, but, that's pretty big time.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty active yesterday.
I did too.
I thought he was moving around pretty good.
That's great stuff.
Malik Reed's been a nice find, too.
Right.
No, good job done by the defense.
Really good job done by the defense. And
we're back.
I know that Miami hadn't been putting a lot of offensive numbers up. They hadn't. I mean, they were scoring on defense, on special teams, on short fields, and all that kind of stuff. But good for the Broncos to control the tempo of this game and control the physicality battle of this game. Good for them on defense.
By the way, when Tua got yanked and Fitz came in,
yeah,
I wrote, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Get the kids to bed. It's getting late.
Yeah, I thought, I was watching it after the fact, and I still got nervous.
Next on the Morning Bro.
We have several of our own free agents that we want to take care of and have to take care of, and then certainly see what else is out there. But it's something that we've never dealt with before, so it'll be fascinating to see it. How quickly this offseason quickly wraps up. And again, hopefully we're able to bring a bunch of our guys and get ready for December 1st.
Yeah, about that, Tim Connelly. Not going the way that the front office thought. Jeremy Grant, who when they acquired Jeremy Grant, Nuggets Media made a big point of saying that they were getting one of the more underrated power forwards in the game. Then he went out and had a really good playoff run. He was their third best player. And number one on the Nuggets offseason to-do list was re-sign Jeremy Grant. Members of Nuggets media were like, oh yeah, it'll happen. Don't worry about it. Huh. He leaves. Even worse, he took the same amount of money to go to Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit. So the Nuggets do not go out and make a move for a shooter. They lose Jeremy Grant. They lose Mason Plumlee, but good news. Paul Millsap's coming back on a one-year deal.
Oh, good. It's great. Pull him right out of the oxygen tent. Paul Millsap. I hope his head doesn't fall off because he's old.
Who at times looked like he was calcifying right in front of our eyes.
Well,
it looked like he had looked at Medusa.
Yeah.
And he was turning to stone.
At least they didn't pay him $30
million. That's true.
So
it's a bargain. It's 1 year, $10 million. So not a good offseason thus far for the Denver Nuggets. I'm sure James Merrillat will have some thoughts on that, as well as the Broncos, when he'll join us coming up next. All right, let us jump right in. James Merrillat from 1043thefan.com joins us on the Fireball Hotline. And James, am I correct in reading some of your tweets last night that you thought that after a rough start, Drew Lock played a pretty good game?
Yeah, I thought he showed toughness yesterday, both mentally and physically. I mean, obviously, you know, with the oblique injury and the rib injury, just being out there showed some toughness. But look, that interception on the third play of the game, coming off a 4-interception game, that could have just snowballed and turned into a total mess. And I thought he was actually pretty good yesterday. I mean, he converted several third and longs, most of them with throws, but the third and 13 on the first touchdown drive that he converted with his feet. I thought those are the kind of plays that are enticing about Drew Lock. You know, there aren't a lot of quarterbacks that can turn third and 10 into first and 10. And he did it multiple times yesterday. So No, I thought he was really good yesterday. And, you know, I know that people are going to focus on the interception and it was bad. But man, I thought given the circumstance, I thought he was pretty darn good against a really good defense.
How concerned are you about the deep shot, the inaccuracies with the deep ball? Because there's probably five or six balls that his receivers never even got a chance to go. I mean, they're not 50-50 balls because they're 0-100 balls. Like,
right.
There's no chance of getting those balls because of the fact that you're just not putting it on your receivers. How concerned are you about that?
Very. I mean, look, he had a throw to KJ Hamler in the first half that, was a perfect play design, perfect play call. Hamler ran the right route. He got the matchup you wanted. It's supposed to be a touchdown, and an NFL quarterback has to make that throw, and he wasn't close. So, yeah, I'm concerned about that. I mean, that's a play you just absolutely have to make. And that's one of those that you go through, you know, every team in the league and look at their quarterback and say, well, he would have made that. Yeah, that's a concern. And it's odd to me because, you know, he can make all the throws. He makes a lot of plays that, are much more difficult than that. But for whatever reason, the deep ball, even on one like that where it was a, you know, wide open receiver, it was a, you know, he wasn't under pressure. He just can't make that throw. So no, that's a giant concern because look, this is a team that moved the ball a ton yesterday. They had 459 yards of offense. They only scored 20 points. Why? Because plays like that, instead of turning into long touchdowns, turn into, hey, it's time to punt. Yeah, that's a big time concern.
The fumble at the goal line by Melvin Gordon, does that only strengthen your belief that Philip Lindsay should be the feature guy?
No. and I know I'm going to sound like, hey, other than the ending, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? But, you know, that was a great run by Melvin Gordon. It really was. And the ending was not good. I get it. And the fumble can't happen. But that play in particular, if you, the 99% of it was something that Philip Lindsay can't do. It was a great job by Melvin Gordon. He's going into the end zone on a play that had no business turning into a touchdown. And yeah, he fumbled at the end of it and that wasn't good. But, you know, Philip Lindsay, he had a couple of nice runs yesterday, but man, that guy turns first and 10 into second and 12, second and 13, second and 14. Over and over and over again, he's too feast or famine. And there's a reason why Melvin Gordon plays, and it's not some sort of conspiracy against Philip Lindsay. There's a reason you see Royce Freeman in the game late for pass protection. It's because Philip Lindsay is just he's a liability in those phases of the game. And I know people don't want to hear it, but that's just the reality of it. He's terrible in pass protection. He's not a great receiver out of the backfield. And too often, he either is going to have a 20-yard run or he's going to lose two. You know, that's not the balance a team wants. He just isn't a guy that, you know, can consistently move the chains, and that's why he's not on the field. It's not that the coaches don't like Philip Lindsay. It's that Philip Lindsay's game isn't consistent enough to be on the field repeatedly.
Speaking of coaches, Pat Shurmur, what'd you make of the game plan?
I thought it was really good yesterday. And look, 20 points, I know that's not going to get anybody excited. And what you put on the scoreboard is ultimately the result that matters. But that's a game they should have had 38 points, right? They fumble at the goal line. Now you're at 27. They missed on the fourth and one, which should have at least been three, but could have been seven. So now you're at like 30. And then they had a, you know, second and one at the nine, and it had to settle for a field goal. So you're at, you know, 34 points if you get that. I know that's a lot of, you know, I'm doing, you know, gymnastics here to get to that. But they moved up and down the field against a really good defense. I thought Pat Shurmur's game plan was good yesterday. I thought the Broncos had really good balance. That was the best offensive performance we've seen out of that team in a long, long time. No, I was reason to be encouraged. And you wouldn't normally say that in a game where you scored 20 points. But 20 points wasn't really indicative of how dominant they were on offense.
Jay's got a little over a minute left. How would you describe the Nuggets offseason thus far?
I thought their draft was good considering where they were, you know, selecting and then getting back in was nice, but they're sitting in the pits and watching other teams lap them. That's what's happening. You know, the Jeremy Grant situation was very disappointing. I think they thought they were going to get him back. And then, you know, when they didn't have a plan for, okay, what are we going to do in his absence? So, look, the Nuggets are worse right now than they were when they lost to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, and other teams in the West are getting better. It's been very disappointing, Mike.
But did you buy a Millsap jersey?
Vote for Millsap.
He's back.
Yeah, no. Look, at some point they kind of had to scramble and do something. But no, Paul Millsap, a guy who, you know, should be down low and you know, battling for points in the paint, who wants to stand outside and shoot threes. We all, you know what that guy's like at the rec center, and we don't like to play with him. That's what the Nuggets just signed for $10 million. But they had to do something, but that's indicative of, plan B was not very good for the Nuggets.
All right, James, thank you.
You bet, guys. Thanks.
James Marilyn from 1043thefan.com. Check out everything they got going on there throughout the course of this, holiday week. All right. It is a Bronco Reaction Monday. Getting a lot in on the RamosLive.com text line. Your thoughts on Drew Locke. Every week there's a, evaluation of whether or not he can be the guy or not. Did Pat Shurmur finally click with this offense? That's coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.